Hi, this is Lisa Nichols, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So, good evening. That's so funny, right? Because it's Tuesday morning for you listening in. But actually, I'm sitting here. It's about midnight on Monday night. And I actually have a golf game in the morning. It's Jen's birthday tomorrow. And so I'm going to actually record this, upload it tonight so that we can sneak away in the early hours of the morning and get to our tea time. But I've got to really describe what's going on here, right? I'm sitting on the deck at the lake. You can hear I think you can hear it, the gentle lapping of the waves on the shoreline, which is really close by. But we have the most gorgeous full moon. It almost feels like daylight. And the moon is so full and so bright. And as it came up over the hillside, it was amazing. It was almost like someone had it on a rope and was pulling it up, right? So had a gorgeous day. It was my birthday 2 days ago on Sunday. Yesterday, I'm sorry. And Jen's birthday in the morning. And it was just great. You know, we had a lot of friends come over. And some brought tents, and some came and stayed in the cabins, and some people flew in, and some people drove in, and some people, it was awesome. And they have kids, and, you know, and because we have a number of cabins on the property, there was a number of stoves, and a number of barbecues, and a number of fridges. So it's like when people wanted to eat, they just cooked up their own stuff. And normally when I throw a party, I always throw, you know, I always think about the band. I think about the, you know, the food. I think about catering. And this time we decided to just allow everyone to sort of look after themselves, but just be here. And what was amazing for me was that we didn't have to think about anything at all. We just allowed everyone to just be in the space, look after themselves, feed themselves, and just be here when they wanted to be. And we had the most amazing 3 days, three-day party. And today was awesome. You know, today was about 37 degrees. It was really, 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 really hot. And we went out and we were wake surfing. And my ex-wife, Pam, was here. And her and Jen, my fiance, are really, really good friends. And I'm good friends with her, right? And my kids were here. And my partner, Mike's two girls. And we went out. And also Jen's brother, Chris, and his beautiful, beautiful wife. And so we sort of were able to go out and wake surf today. And because Pam, my son Calvin, or my son Ben, have never wake surfed, it was just great to watch people, especially people you love, just really be learning something new. And Cal, my eldest son, had a sore leg, so it wasn't great for him. But Benny, he was like frustrated. He started. He got pulled out of the water. I could see his mindset starting to sort of go the other way. And I'm always trying to talk to him about, you know what? Just focus on what you want. Don't focus on what's going wrong. Don't focus on the problems. And finally, he gets up. And not only does he get up, but imagine wake surfing. So you're behind a boat, and this big wake comes up, and you can actually, in the end, let go of the rope completely and be pushed along by the wave and actually surf behind the boat with no rope at all. So here he is. He's like almost going to quit. I can feel it. You know, he wasn't feeling great. He'd been up till 1 o'clock in the morning. So he's a kid that likes a lot of sleep, but I could feel he wasn't in his best spirits, right? So he gets up finally after like 7 attempts. It was like a long time. And then he's up. And not only does he get up, but he catches a wave immediately, and he's wake surfing, no rope. He's being a little cocky. He's having fun. He's laughing. He's just having a blast. And it was just so great to see. And what fascinates me, though, is this idea about when we start something new is how long it takes to get to a place where we actually love it. And if we can be patient with ourselves in the beginning and really allow ourselves to be in the moment and not get frustrated and be kind to ourselves with everything. It doesn't matter what it is, whether an instrument, whether it's a sport, or whether it's a, it doesn't matter what it is, a new art form. It's just this wonderful process of allowing ourselves to be a beginner and being a disaster. Every master was once a disaster. That's what I really love. And it was so great to watch that. I was so proud of Ben just to be able to sort of be in that space. And Cal, you know, he was in a different space the whole day. He was like, he just got back from camp 3 weeks. He wasn't really in his body today. He wasn't really present. He had a lot of stuff. He just was 15, raving hormones, hairy legs, you know. And just so I could tell that he wasn't really here today, you know. And it's hard as a parent sometimes. You want the best. You want to push. You want to be able to say, come on, let's do it, right? But in the end, you have to surrender to the moment and just say, you know what, it wasn't the moment for him. And hopefully we'll get him back out on the boat. But anyway, I just feel so blessed and so lucky to be in this space. And then I realized that, you know, my guest today is somebody who is really somebody who's overcome something that a lot of people don't fully understand. But what I love about the questions that you'll hear me ask is that they are relevant to life. Not just to a disease, if we can class depression as a disease. And I know that, you know, I've had friends who have really suffered in this area where, you know, there's stuff going on with their bodies where they don't see the greatest world. They're really, their view of everything is very hard on themselves. It's a challenge, right? And so to have somebody who's been able to really go into the sort of the moment where taking one's life is an option. And I always say that's an incredibly selfish place to be, but, you know, that's me. I've not been there. So it's easy for me to say it's selfish, but, you know, it's also the place where imagine being at the end of your rope where despair and believing that your place in the world or the world would be better because you wouldn't be there is an incredibly hard place to imagine for those of us who have not been there yet. But I know that so many people have, and I know it's a thing that a lot of us don't really understand lesser degrees of the same symptoms, where we allow ourselves to be governed by some negative thinking, negative thoughts, negative beliefs about ourselves. And imagine when it gets worse and worse to a state of complete depression or even on the verge of suicide. So I want you to sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with this guy who really has earned his stripes. He's been in those darkest places and come out and really allowed himself to come out with some very natural approaches, with some strategies, which, again, I think that each one of us can adopt. If you listen to my show just 2 weeks ago, it was all about happiness and saying that there are specific things we can do every single day to be happier. And here's a guy that's allowed himself to step into those dark hallways and to be able to find a way out using some beautiful, natural, and very, very powerful methods to reclaim his space and to step into his own happiness. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the wonderful Craig Merriweather.
So here we are. You know, I always say I'm going to come up with something absolutely profound to say at the beginning of a show, but then I get overcome with excitement, and here I am again. And I've got a wonderful guest on today, and I'm just excited to get to know him and to really get to know this story and really sort of pick it around and and bring out all the gems and the nuggets that this gentleman has to share. So, Craig, are you there?
I am here. Thank you, David, for having me on the show.
Well, thank you. You know, and you know, I read something about something you've written, which I found to be very profound in many ways. You'd said that you'd read a book by Gladwell, Outliers, where he talked about, you know, 10,000 hours to master anything. And when you look back through your life, you realize the only thing you'd mastered was depression. Is that right?
Yeah. I'd been struggling with depression for a number of years, probably since my teenage years. I'm about to turn 46 in actually a couple of days. And I struggled with depression. I spent a couple of years figuring my way out. I wasn't really thrilled with taking antidepressants. And maybe we can talk about that in a little bit as to why. But struggling with depression. And I got myself out of it. And I had read this book by Malcolm Gladwell. I think it's Outliers is where he talks about that thing. And he talks about how any skill is or talent is not inherent, but you work at it. And his example was the Beatles playing in Germany for so many hours, 8-9 hours a day. And that's how they really solidified their talent as a group. And I was talking to my wife, and I said, you know, that's really interesting. That's fascinating. And basically 10,000 hours, if you break it down, if you want to master the piano, and you spend 2 hours a day practicing piano, and that's Sundays, that's holidays, that's your birthday, that's summer vacations, 2 hours a day, every day, that's going to take you 14 years to, or something like 13.7 years to get to 10,000 hours. 4 hours a day is going to take you around 7 years or so. So I was talking to my wife, I thought, my God, the only thing I'm really a master at is depression. And she says, well, yeah, but you also have all this work you've done to get out of depression, and you've done all this research, and you've done this work, and you looked at the medical reports and the journals and everything, and you have this ability to show people that depression can be ended, that you're not stuck with it for the rest of your life. And so that whole thing kind of turned me around. At first, I was, well, depressed that I was master at depression, but then it's like, well, I learned something. I had the situation. I learned something from it, and now I can, you know, maybe help a person or two to maybe turn their lives around as well.
Well, on your website, depression180.com, I mean, what I find fascinating about this is because so often in the past, I've talked about, you know, if you really want to sort of get out of a dark spot, I don't use the word depression very often, but get out of that sort of heavy, dark, negative energy, you know, just find someone to help, sort of get out there and help someone. And then I realized that I've sort of talked to friends, and I've actually have a friend who's dealt with depression and the whole chemical side of it. But before we get into sort of the nuts and bolts and what you've learned and how people can turn their life around, because these practices are not just for depression, really. I mean, they're things that people can really utilize to sort of do a 180 on many things. But let me ask you a question. What is the stats? I mean, how many people out there are suffering in some way with either depression or what are other terms that are used around this? So sort of, are there sort of mild forms of depression or sort of mental illness? Where are we going? What sort of umbrella does depression fall under for you?
Well, depression to me, I mean, there's a lot of, if you want to get into the technical terms, there's clinical depression, there's major depressive disorder, there's severe depression. There's all sorts of different things. To me, it's once, well, let me start off with this. I don't believe there are good and bad emotions. I believe as human beings, we feel the entire human spectrum of human emotions. I believe there are times where it's you're supposed to feel sadness. There are times when you're supposed to feel grief. There's times when you're supposed to feel anger. I think there's times when your stress is the best thing for you. When you wake up in the middle of the night and you realize your house is on fire and your kids are on the other side of that house, I think stress is the best thing for you. The problem comes when these emotions become stagnant. You know, emotions come in a wave, and, you know, you're sad for if you lose a loved one in your life, if you have a disappointment, if you're going through a divorce, if you've lost your job, you have some financial setbacks, yes, you're going to feel sad, disappointment, grief, but it doesn't stay that way for too long, you know, and you're going to come back up again. And what the problem is when those emotions of sadness and hopelessness and helplessness become stagnant, they become normal. And that's your normal emotional set point. You may go even lower than that, maybe even have feelings of suicide. Maybe you get happy and feel joy occasionally, but after that happiness and joy passes, you're back down to depression again. And so that's when it becomes dangerous. And so when I say depression, this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a feeling that of sadness, helplessness, despair, hopelessness that is normal to you. That is, this is what you feel like when you wake up. This is what you feel like when you go to bed at night.
Mm. And do you find then, I mean, I really, by the way, I love the description. I mean, that sort of idea of sadness, hopelessness, that sort what would you say? You said despair and helplessness. I just want to clarify this for people listening, because if someone's listening right now and they say, you know, I have that feeling, not maybe when I wake up and when I go to bed, but I do struggle with that feeling of hopelessness or helplessness or despair, you know, often, maybe, you know, I experience it throughout almost every day, but it's not consuming my days. Is that a slippery slope? Is it someone going down the road, or is it someone that's sort of just stuck and they maybe not going to go to the point where you may say, well, they're depressed because they're waking up and going to bed that way. But can we just sort of, I just want to sort of broaden the conversation for the whole audience, just in case people are dealing with that, like feeling of hopelessness. I can't tell you how many of my students when I first meet them have that feeling, right?
Right. And it comes down to what's going on in your life. If you're having a life event, a divorce, death of your parents or a spouse, death of a child, you're going through some illness. Maybe you've just found out you have cancer or heart disease or something. Yes, that's going to trigger some emotions. But when you're or you've lost a job or financial setbacks, but when you're feeling helpless and hopeless just as a matter of course,
right,
throughout the day, maybe it's not all day long, maybe it's every now and then or a couple times a week or something. But when that again becomes kind of the normal set point for right. you, then that's a problem, because you don't want to get out of bed in the morning. There's no energy to move you forward. If there's no excitement or any hope that things are going to get better, you're just going to sit and not try to make any movements to make your life better. And so, yeah, there's going to be sadness in your life. There's going to be disappointment. And that's just a part of signing the contract to becoming a human. But again, when that becomes stuck and that becomes your normal emotional way of being, then that's when the problems start. Because if there's hopelessness in your life, if you feel helpless, that to me, that means you don't see a way you can change the situation.
Right.
You're relying on other people, life, the universe, God, to change it for you. And if they're not responding to your whims and wishes, you're feeling helpless. You don't think there's going to change. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. So, or the light at the end of the tunnel is a train coming at you. So that's when the problems come. And oftentimes, you know, and we can get into this a little bit, but there's different reasons why depression may be showing up into your life. It might not be the biochemical thing that the pharmaceutical companies are making their money off of. There's many, many reasons. They're varied and different as to why depression may be showing up in your life. It could be everything from, of course, emotional trauma, memories of some abuse maybe in your past, or a car accident or death of a loved one when you were your small child. There could be the negative thinking loop of you've patterned your mind so that life is hard and nothing's ever going to get better and I can't do anything right. There could also be things like everything from food allergies, you know, or you could be having nutritional deficiencies. You have a thyroid problem. You could have low testosterone. There's a ton of physical ailments, a head injury, if you've fallen off a bicycle or if you've been in a car accident or football tackle or something. There's a lot of different reasons why depression could be showing up in your life. Even things like toxins in your system from your dry cleaning or paint. There is this, and we'll get that in a little bit, but you know, if you're around paint a lot, maybe you're a house painter or just some sort of household cleaner, tons of different ways. And to me, depression is just a warning signal. It's sort of like that check engine light on your car. where it flashes on when there's an issue. And unfortunately, just like the check engine light, depression isn't going to, doesn't show you what the problem is. It's just a way for your brain to signal your body that there's an issue you need to get. Sort of like physical pain. You got physical pain, so the brain is telling you to get your hand off that hot stove. All right.
But before we get into too much of what you've learned, I want to just ask, because I'm fascinated that you were married, you talked about your wife, and yet you were dealing with depression for a long time. How does that work when you're in a relationship and someone you love is, you know, is noticing, and they're noticing the apathy or the hopelessness or the helplessness, as you call it, or the despair, and dealing with it every day? Is it something where they become immune and they just sort of realize that's your just general way of being, or do they feel like they've lost you somewhere? How was that for your wife?
It was difficult for her. In fact, the next kind of project I want to work on is a book about that, you know, how to help a loved one who's dealing with depression. And, you know, I'd love to have her write the foreword or have a chapter in there or something, because, you know, she was amazingly patient and supportive. The thing with depression in men, and here's a whole another show for you, but the thing with depression in men, it can oftentimes manifest itself in anger and isolation, and doing reckless things like, you know, quitting their job so they can open up a bar, or, you know, engaging in risky sexual behavior, or having affairs and things, or to rage at the little things in life, or become physically abusive. Luckily, my depression didn't manifest as those things. I certainly was kind of isolated myself, but she was very supportive. She's very patient. And when I realized what the situation was, we talked about it, and I started working with myself on things, and she was helpful with that. I remember one of the things I was doing was taking these supplements. One was called 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan. And what that does is actually creates serotonin in your brain. Serotonin is a neurotransmitter, a brain chemical that creates happiness in you. It's kind of what antidepressants are supposed to deal with. But antidepressants don't create serotonin. It just kind of mixes it around your brain. What 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, does is actually create serotonin. It's something that actually happens in your body naturally, but you have to have enough tryptophan. And tryptophan is that thing in turkey or chicken that's supposed to make you really sleepy if you eat. But if you're not getting enough tryptophan, your body can't make 5-HTP. If you don't have enough 5-HTP, your body can't make enough serotonin. So you can go to your health food store and find these supplements, you know, just like you take vitamin C or something. And I would be in such a bad state that she would walk in, I'd be in the office or wherever I was, she'd walk in with three or four of these pills and a glass of water, and she'd, you know, stand there and watch me take these things, because I was in a head state where, well, nothing's working, so why would I even take these pills, and to hell with life, and, you know, I'm just gonna forget it because nothing works. Well, she would come in and she'd give these pills, and you could just feel the darkness lift, the gray, grayness lift. And, you know, one of the other things she did that was extremely helpful, besides stick around, was she bought me this thing called a happy light. She was at a drugstore one day just doing some shopping, having to walk down the right aisle at the right time on the right day, and they had all these little full spectrum bulb lights. And if you ever see the sun go through a prism, you'll know that sunbeam turns into a rainbow. Well, that rainbow is a full spectrum, but our incandescent bulbs and our fluorescent bulbs don't have that full spectrum. So they've invented these bulbs for light therapy situations, full spectrum bulbs. And what that does is help creates vitamin D within your system. Well, she bought one of these lights for me just to try. And it was, again, it was one of those godsends. I was like, wow, that was one of the best things that I ever did, was sit in front of this light therapy box for, you know, an hour or so. And you just, again, it was like drinking a couple of cups of coffee, my energy level rose. So, it's one of those hard things. It's I was talking about this with somebody the other day. When is enough enough? And I think one of the things that was helpful is that she could see I was making a concerted effort to change and to work on myself. And she was all for that.
That gave her hope.
Yeah, it gave her hope that, you know, this could be better. And I would explain.
Sorry, I just want to, how long were you struggling with this? How many years?
I would think, I think it started a long time ago, probably in my teenage years, if I kind of just went back and to try to find a date. I'd probably say there was some family stuff that happened in my teenage years and the kind of the processing work I've done in terms of dealing with the emotional trauma and the negative thinking habits kind of brings me back to that. And I think it was just one thing that piles on top of another, and one situation that didn't get resolved or healed kind of becomes the normal way of thinking and thinking, well, if this situation happened, then of course nothing else can go right in my life. And, you know, you just end up, you know, going through life without challenging these beliefs that we've come up with. And maybe these beliefs even came in when we were little children, when we were kind of being first programmed between the ages of birth and 6 years old. You know, maybe we're dealing with these beliefs, these distorted ways of thinking. In fact, it was Dr. David Burns who wrote this great book, Feeling Good, who said and I'll paraphrase a little bit here, but he said the beliefs of a depressed person are always distorted. And he doesn't say sometimes or every now and then. He says the beliefs of depressed people, the thoughts of depressed people are always distorted in some way. And if I was working with that when I was, you know, 15, 16 years old, and I just keep going, and it wasn't that I, you know, couldn't get out of bed in the morning, but life, you know, wasn't as joyful as it probably could have. And it just started weighing down on me over the years. And it wasn't bad in the beginning. I certainly had some anxiety issues, I remember, and depression is certainly a sibling of anxiety. But you just keep moving through life, and if you keep practicing these things over again, it's like the 10,000 hours. You know, if you're practicing piano over and over again, you're going to learn piano. If you're practicing martial arts, you're going to get good at that. Well, what if you're practicing disappointment and frustration and sadness and hopelessness? Well, you're going to get good at that. And those neuron connections in your brain that helps you learn how to walk. You know, you've heard that expression, brain cells that fire together, wire together. Well, that's how you learn how to walk. These brain cells connect to each other and they start talking to each other. Okay, he wants to walk. So right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. Or you learn to play piano, you learn to ride a bike, you learn to drive a stick shift. Well, those are actions, but it also works with thoughts and emotions. That's how you create those, the same or the same way of neurons connect with each other. And if you practice those thoughts and emotions over and over again, well, guess what? Those become automatic. They become stronger. They become faster. Just like now driving a stick shift is great. Learning, you don't think about having to learn to walk. Watch a 12-month-old baby learning how to walk. It's very difficult. It takes all their concentration. Well, now you don't think about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting though with what you're saying, because I mean, the positive psychology is kind of like a new wave of expression where people are saying, you know, we can actually practice to be happy. And really, I mean, they're simple practices, but they're daily activities that don't take a lot of energy or effort. But if we don't know about them, it's very, very easy to stay on the other side of the fence, right?
Well, and the thing is, just doing them. And I hear people say, oh, you got to do your affirmations and you got to do this and that. And other people say, well, that does nothing. Well, it's like, again, it's like, what are you practicing for every day? Are you going through your day being disappointed, being frustrated, being feeling hopeless, feeling helpless? Well, that's creating those synaptic connections, those neuron brain cell connections to grow stronger, to go faster, to become automatic. So you have to practice what you want your life to be like. If look at the results in your life right now. The results in your life are due to what you've been practicing up to this point, your 10,000 hours. So if you don't like the results, you have to start practicing different things. It's like that quote from, that quote from Albert Einstein. And he says, you cannot solve a problem from the same
mind, the same mind that created it.
See the world anew. So you cannot create your new life of happiness, of success, with the same mind and thinking patterns that created the life you have now. And that's where that practicing comes in. That's where, you know, spending, if you want to become master of the piano, you better start practicing, whether even if it's in your mind, practicing playing in your mind. That's been shown to create the neuron connections. But you have to do something. And it's the same with the positive thinking and the happy thoughts of happiness. You have to sit there and practice that. And they're there.
Well, I think that when we look at, you know, how the brain works as far as the superhighways, you know, the repetitive thought patterns will create a superhighway. You call it a set point. Same thing, right? Well, how we think, feel, and act around anything creates, you know, a blueprint, as it were. And so, you know, if you've got if you're feeling sad in the beginning, you said it wasn't as bad in the beginning, you start to focus on these negative things, so you're having a negative conversation in your head. I mean, you're creating a massive superhighway in the brain of negativity. And so obviously at some point, once you start becoming aware of saying, well, I don't want to live like this anymore. And there is hope by listening to this show and listening to you saying, well, listen, you know what? I was able to turn it around, but there are things I did, and we'll dig into that in a moment, things that you did on a daily basis that allowed you to do a 180. And that's what your website, again, I want to remind people what it's called, right? Depression180.com. That the idea that they can do something about it. And the truth is, whether it's, if we go to the extreme of depression, as it were, or the beginning stages of when you said it wasn't so bad, but those negative thoughts, I mean, they are going to become something, and they will end up reprogramming us, and we will see it in our results. That's exactly what you just said, right?
Yeah, I got to the point where what turned it around for me, the rock bottom, it turned around for me. I woke up one morning and I had this, I don't know if you've ever gone to bed at night or over a week and said, well, I have this problem. I need a solution to this problem, whatever it is. And then one morning you wake up and say, oh, there's a solution. Well, I woke up one morning and I had this way of committing suicide that I thought would be really easy and effective and no muss, no fuss. And what scared me about that thought, after I thought about it for about a week, is what a good idea it seemed to me to be. It was a great way to end this kind of emotional hurt and pain that I was in, that I was tired of. I didn't want to feel like this anymore. And I thought, my wife could find somebody better. She could certainly, you know, find somebody who would be willing to, she's such a beautiful, wonderful human soul. And I thought, there's got to be somebody who can participate in this relationship better than I can, who can take care of her better than I can. And the thing that halted this whole situation was my son, who is, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years old at the time. And I just thought, you know, how could my wife ever explain to him that my suicide wasn't his fault? And I couldn't abandon him. I couldn't leave him, like that. And so I thought, well, if I can't do this for myself, at least I can do it for them. And you get into those situations where, you know, if you can't do it for yourself, you're willing to go to bat for a loved one. And that's what I decided to do. And I figured I had three options. I could stay the way I was, which I didn't like. I could take myself out, which was not going to happen. So the only other option is up and out. And that was the start. I thought, okay, well, I got to find a way out. I'd had some friends who had been dealing with antidepressants, and they were just having a horrible experience. Again, there's another 2 or 3 hour show right there, antidepressants. And I just thought, okay, there's got to be ways. And thank God for the internet. Thank God for public library. There's so much information out there, and it's kind of piecemeal. Is what I found frustrating. That's why I put together the Depression 180 program, because, you know, what might work with for somebody that this book explains might not work for somebody else. It all depends on how your mind's been programmed. It all depends on the thoughts you're having. It all depends on you know, your food intake and your exercise, you know, how much you're exercising. It's a lot of different things. And I found with myself, it wasn't just one thing. You know, I could do the exercises, you know, and go out and when I say exercise, I mean go out and exercise, like you're running or you're playing racquetball or you're, you know, ultimate frisbee or whatever it is to get your heart beating. That's super important. Exclamation point. You need to be moving your body. And if that means, you know, taking a dance class or going to the clubs at night or something where you need to be getting your heart rate up, changing your diet, you know, all these things were very helpful. Taking the 5-HTP for me, there's some other supplements. 5-HTP doesn't work for everybody. There's other ones like SAMe and St. John's Wort, various things like that. The light therapy box, you know, all these things put together got me to a point where I could get out of bed in the morning and then work on the real issues, which, you know, the emotional trauma or the negative thought patterns, you know. And what I found for myself, it was this cocktail of different, this mixture of different things that actually got me up and out of it. For other people, it might be just going to the doctor, taking a blood test, realizing that you have a thyroid problem. Hypothyroidism disguises itself perfectly as depression. And this is what's frustrating with going to the doctor. You have to explain exactly what it is you want, because a lot of people go to the doctor and say, I'm fatigued. I'm just feeling sad all the time. I have low energy. I just don't want to get up and do my work anymore. Life doesn't feel joy. So they got 10 minutes. They quickly write you a prescription for antidepressant. There you go. Go to the pharmacist next. But what if you have a thyroid problem? Antidepressant's not going to help you with a thyroid problem. Antidepressant's not going to help you if you have low vitamin D. Antidepressant's not going to help you if you have low testosterone. Which is a big one for men, especially once we hit our 40s and our 50s. You know, it's funny with the vitamin D. I don't remember if you remember from high school history class, that old sailor's disease, 1700, scurvy. One of the signs that you were getting scurvy was that you were depressed. So a low vitamin C could be causing depression. So it's in a number of things. And unfortunately, we get thrown this idea that there's this one pill cure-all, and for most people, it doesn't work. In fact, there's a lot of research, a bunch of books written about how placebos work just as well as antidepressants in curing depression, and that's research that was done by pharmaceutical companies. A guy named Dr. Irving Kirsch, he wrote the book The Emperor's New Drug. He's the one that found all this research. He actually did a Freedom of Information Act to get the unpublished data that the pharmaceutical company sent to the Food and Drug Administration here in the United States, and found that the drug company's own tests showed that placebos were working just as well as antidepressants. So, you know, we're kind of going all over the map here.
But I want to really just sort of ask you a question. How big's the problem? Tell me, how many people out there are dealing with depression in some form or another, whether it's a mild depression or a severe depression? Do we know the numbers? I mean, what the numbers are?
The World Health Organization estimates that about 15% of the planet's population is depressed, struggles with depression. So that's over 1 billion people. That's billion with a B. Here in the United States, it's somewhere around 10 to 12% of the population. So we're looking at whatever, I don't know what the population of the United States is right now, but something like 35, 40 million people at any given time. But the thing with depression is, I mean, it's probably going to touch everybody's life at some point. If you don't struggle with it yourself, you're going to know somebody who does. Even if they hide it really well, especially men, we're great at hiding our depression, whether we self-medicate with alcoholism and drugs or too much TV or too many video games or whatever, and the isolation and the anger issues. You're going to know somebody who's struggling with it, whether it's a loved one, a family member, a friend, a coworker. So
I just want to talk about that for a second. So you talked about, you know, for a guy who's playing video games all the time or getting, you know, maybe not drunk, but drinking every day, and so how is that masking in some way? Is it just avoiding Is it sort of staying out of the reality by sort of, you know, taking our focus into these kind of numbing places? Is that kind of what's going on?
You're just trying to numb yourself from the emotional pain. And, you know, just because you play video games doesn't mean you're depressed. You're kind of looking for new behavior. If you all of a sudden start drinking too much, if you all of a sudden start taking risky behavior, if you all of a sudden start getting into bar fights or getting into arguments with your spouse or at work or your mood shifts suddenly, very much a red flag that there, something's going on and quite possibly could be depression. You know, there's a lot of the articles and books you read will say that women are twice as depressed as men are. But there's a small minority of researchers and physiologists who believe that that men suffer from depression at the same rates as women do. We just hide it really well. And there was one study that I mentioned in the book that men doctors missed 67% of depression in men because they were looking for more feminized signs of depression, like crying and things like that. And more than likely, you know, even if a man is suffering from those bouts of crying, they're not going to admit it. They're especially not going to admit it to a doctor. They're going to go to the doctor and say, well, I feel fatigued. I'm tired all the time. And they're going to get a, you know, prescription for a, you know, a stimulant or an upper or something. But we hide it really well. And if you, men struggle with alcohol rates and drug abuse rates higher than women. And if you add in the alcoholism and the drug abuse rates along with the depression, those match the depression rates in women. And again, you know, to be a strong man, you know, doesn't mean you're fooling around with your emotions. You know, you're happy and positive and thinking clearly and optimistic about the future. And so if you're not that, you might want to try to hide it or you know, kind of, you know, just men like to fix things, right? And if we can't fix it, then we kind of like to ignore it. And I think
that's right.
So we might be, you know, watching too much TV, you know, it's turning on because, you know, that there's been studies that show that when you turn on the TV, you know, the different brainwave states. So right now you and I were talking, so we're in beta, and then the next down is alpha. You're kind of getting into a meditative state, and then theta and then delta, which is sleep. Well, that alpha state, which is meditation or daydreaming or praying brainwave state, that's the state you get into when you watch TV. So it makes sense that if you want to numb yourself, maybe alcohol's not your thing or drugs are same, but if you're watching TV, it's kind of getting you down into that meditative state where maybe you don't have to think about your problems or feel your emotions anymore.
Right. So let me ask you, I want to go to the extreme for a second here, because I know one of our listeners recently lost a nephew to suicide, and we see a lot of, you know, suicides in that younger group. Where does depression cross that threshold into, you know, where you said you'd sort of come up with this plan where you start to believe the story that your wife's going to be better with somebody else. And so the more you think about it, the less you want to be around. But, you know, how dangerous is that road, especially in young people? And how do you help? I mean, how does someone like your wife, if she could rewind a decade ago and start seeing these early signs, how does somebody help out, especially somebody young who's dealing with this?
Well, the first thing I would reassure them that, one, you care about them and that you love them, because a lot of times the depression, especially in children, they might be getting this idea that they're all alone, they're isolated, nobody cares about them, nobody would miss them if they want to, if they were to take themselves out. And unfortunately, it oftentimes, the reason they have that is maybe the home life isn't that great. The parents are, for whatever reason, not seeing the signs because they're not available. I mean, there's been a divorce, or maybe they're having problems in their own life. You know, maybe this could just be modeled behavior. That's what happens between 0 and 6 years old, is children learn how to do things by watching other people, and it's the people they're around the most, which is usually parents and siblings. And so if this, and that was one of my main problems in my life. It's like, well, my God, for the first 8 years of his life, I just modeled this behavior for my son. And if nothing else, I need to find ways to deal with depression. So in case this manifests in his life, I can show him some ways. So the main thing, especially with children, is it's difficult because you're getting to that teenage years where are they just being smart asses and moody because they're teenagers? Or is there a real issue there? And a part of it just might be, is it normal behavior or do they have the ups and downs? You know, so maybe they have a boyfriend or girlfriend, so that makes them happy. They're playing sports or they're playing music or whatever they're doing. If they do have some opportunities to feel happiness and joy, and then it might just be normal hormonal changes that teenagers go through or young kids go through. If they're losing pleasure and joy in the things they love to do, that's a huge sign. If you guys start listening to what they're saying, or if they're saying it's like, well, you know, I'm never going to be able to change this. I'm always going to feel like this. Nobody likes me. You know, don't brush it off. Listen, you know, and again, men, dads, you know, it's so easy to want to try and fix things. Sometimes the best thing you can do is listen and say, you know, I understand life is difficult and I'm here and I love you and you're the best thing in my life. And we're going to figure out some ways to deal with this. And it might be needing to start off with going to the doctor, the pediatrician, their normal general practitioner and saying, look, I just want you to do a general workup. Let's see the levels. Maybe there's a thyroid thing. Maybe there's a hormonal thing going on. And they might recommend doing an evaluation with a therapist. And, you know, you're walking into a therapist with your list and you say, okay, well, these symptoms started, this behavior started here, and this is what I'm seeing, and this is very different than it used to be, and I'm concerned. And, you know, it's who knows what the answer is, but that you're willing to take some steps is huge. And it shows them, your child, even if they're being moody and all that, it shows them that you care enough to take your time to work with them. And one of the best things is start interacting with them. And I know this is taking your free time. And I know that, you know, work can be difficult. And the last thing you want to do after you get home is maybe go out and start running around. But start finding some exercise things to do. And I know exercise is a dirty word to a lot of people, but maybe you could find ways to ride your bikes or to play frisbee golf or get on a softball team or something, play, you know, football or soccer with them, or just throw the ball around, you know, play catch or play some one-on-one basketball, you know, something so you can start getting it, because that would be huge. And you got to start looking at what you're eating, whether it's you or your spouse or your kids, because food is a huge, if this is the way you're fueling your body, this is the way you're fueling your brain. And you wouldn't start putting in cheap gas in your car. You know, if you go down the street and say, well, gas is $3 cheaper down here at this store, that would raise some red flags. And you're not going to put in that gas in your car because you know it's going to wreck your engine. Well, we do that with our food.
It almost seems like a catch-22, though, isn't it? Because you've got this idea where the world is very toxic anyway, and all the food is processed, and you get somebody who's not feeling great about themselves reaching in the processed food cupboard for even easier food because they don't have the motivation to cook. So then you get this cycle of somebody who's not feeling great, feeding their body the worst kinds of foods, the, you know, high processed, high sugars, high that. And so there's this, so what I like about what you're saying a lot, I mean, I like everything you're saying, but the idea that exercise and the idea that nutrition and the idea that, you know, connection, all these sort of normal things that we know contribute to happiness. If someone's working with a happiness practitioner saying, look, you know, how do I create more happiness in their life? One of the things they're going to say is, well, make sure you exercise every day, because that motion really, really does contribute to happiness. And so we've got a society that's, you know, obesity is an epidemic. And so are we seeing an increase in depression worldwide with the sort of the decline in great standards of eating? Are we seeing those things coming up and going down at the same time?
It seems to be correlated. I don't know. But what it comes down to, if you don't like the results in your life, you're going to have to make some changes. I'm talking major lifestyle changes. That's frightening because it's going to be new and different. It's going to take some work to figure it out. But again, it's that Einstein quote, you cannot solve a problem from the same consciousness that created it. You got results in your life you don't like, you better start doing things differently. And that might mean going to the health food store and learning about how to start eating better. And yes, it's easier to reach for the bowl of ice cream than a spinach with raspberry vinaigrette salad. But these, and this is where a partner comes in and says, well, that's, you know, they throw away the cookies and the candy and the stuff and says, well, this is what we're eating. And you put your foot down and you start taking the multivitamins and you maybe try some of the supplements like 5-HTP or SAMe, which is S-A-M little E, St. John's, where some of these vitamin D, here in America anyway, it's something like, I've heard different rates, but something between like 75 and 80% of the people are vitamin D deficient. And that's going outside, the sunshine on your skin, so your body can create the vitamin D. Well, we work inside all day long, and even when we're outside, we might be wearing long sleeve shirts or jackets, but most people need full body exposure at noontime for about half an hour, 45 minutes. And, you know, that's standing out in the sun with your bathing suit on. And a lot of people aren't doing that, can't do that, or afraid of the UV rays or what have you. And that's why these light therapy boxes, the one I got, is called Happy Light. You just went on the internet and searched for Happy Light. Or actually, if you went to my website, depression180.com/light therapy, there's some articles about it from the Mayo Clinic and different light therapy boxes you can use. But the one I got is called Happy Light. You just Google that. I think it was like $30 or $40. You can get them all the way up to $200. But and that, again, that just helped me profoundly. The 5-HTP, the exercise, the changing the diet. And it might not have solved the problem, like I said before, but at least it got me out of bed. You know,
so,
it got
so,
me.
So we don't have many minutes left. I just want to sort of really be clear on this. So we've got these wonderful strategies that I think will help anyone. I mean, whether they're in depression or not, just start really thinking about the impact of nutrition, the impact of exercise, the impact of community, that kind of thing. But you know, would you consider yourself a happy person now? I mean, since you started doing this work, and sort of tell me, how long has it been since you kind of consciously made the choice to sort of pull yourself out of this? How long did that process take?
It took me, it was about January 20th, 2008. Was the day I woke up with that great idea in my head. It wasn't so good. And I think overall, with all my kind of ups and downs and setbacks and back sliding, it took about 2-3 years for me to really feel like I had beat this thing. And the reason why is because I was just trying this, that, and the other thing. And it was all new to me. And like I said, I'd read this book and it'd say do one thing, and I'd read another book and it'd say do that thing. And finally, after I found my mixture of work for me, and then and again, that was like, here I get to I've raised my emotional set point level to the point where now I can work on the deeper stuff, right, the emotional stuff, and kind of reprogramming the mind stuff. Because again, it's like, what are you practicing every day? So can you take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a half an hour to, you know, start programming yourself, start doing those 10,000 hours of mastery for happiness. You know, is that possible? You've spent so much time working on disappointment and hopelessness. Can you start programming your mind for happiness? And it is possible. You know, they've even done work with stroke victims to start working paralyzed limbs because they reprogrammed their mind so that they can start working with that arm that's been paralyzed for 7-8 years. These are elderly people in their 70s that had stroke.
Well, they're saying that with neuroplasticity and neurogenesis, but neuroplasticity, where they're saying that you can recreate the brain, you can with focus. I know there's a website, I think it's called Luminosity, but it's brain exercises where it really helps you keep the brain alive, because it is, you know, this massive organ in the body. It takes all the oxygen that we have. And it is susceptible to all these things, to all these environmental things. But We only have a couple of minutes left now, and I just really want to sort of wonder, is there something we've missed? Is there something you want to leave? Because I know this is such a big thing. I mean, and unless if you're not dealing with it, then you're probably going to be find somebody in your family or life or group of friends that is dealing with it. But what is there something we've missed before we sort of move on to my final question for you?
Probably if I was to leave somebody, if they only remember one thing from this interview, I just want them to know that depression isn't your fault and it can be fixed. There's a stigma about depression that maybe things like cancer or heart disease or diabetes or something like does not have. It's almost as if, you know, you get some love and sympathy and caring because you got cancer, but depression is somehow your fault. Again, depression is just this warning sign from your brain to your body that there is something going on. Instead of physical pain, like a burn or something, it's giving you emotional pain and saying there's a situation you need to look at. There's an issue here that needs to be fixed and you need to do it now. And unfortunately, with depression, we tend to ignore it or take a pill that might mask it. And, you know, it's like putting a piece of duct tape over your check engine light. It doesn't help anything, but it might make you feel better for a little bit, if at all, if the side effects don't make it worse. But depression can be fixed, but it's going to take some changes in your life. Again, if you know you don't like the results, you better start making some changes.
And I want to reiterate what you said earlier, because I thought it was great. You know, you said, you know, you didn't have the courage maybe to do it for you, or the mindset. But, you know, when you start thinking about your kids and you start thinking about the people around you, sometimes it's easier to do something for somebody else initially until you start, you know, because it sounded to me like, you know, as you started to do the right things, it gave you the energy to continue to do bigger and more important things till you got to the point where you are today, where you're really helping a lot of people. Last question for you. You know, the show's called The Kick-Ass Life. If you had to define what the kick-ass life was to you, how do you define a kick-ass life?
To me, the kick-ass life is understanding that there's a happiness within you that's always there that you can access. It's just been covered over with this programming, these emotional setbacks, these maybe humiliations you suffer throughout your life, and it's kind of been maxed over, as if your window is so covered with muck and mud. Doesn't mean the outside beautiful world is gone. It just means you got to clean off that window so you can see it again. It's always there, and that happiness is always there. And to live that kick-ass life is to mean that you feel like that, you know. And that's when life becomes incredible, when you wake up in the morning thinking, yes, I can do something here with my life. And even if it's just reaching out to somebody else to help them, to give them a hand. I recently started working with some kids from like a scouting program, and it's like, what a major pain in the behind. But it's like every now you reach that kid who's like maybe having a bad time at home because their parents are broken up or something, and they reach out to you and say, you know, thanks for doing this and appreciate it. It's like, my God, that's a kick-ass life. You know, it's just knowing that you can be there for somebody else and help them. And sometimes that means putting on the oxygen mask, like in the airplanes, putting the oxygen mask on yourself first, so then you can help somebody else. It's like, if you can't feel that happiness and that love within you, how are you going to show it to somebody else? So if you can, and it takes some work, you know, to dig out, dig yourself out, maybe dealing with depression, but the opportunity is there for you to do it. And not for yourself, then maybe somebody else.
Well, what I love is that you've given a lot of hope. And I know it is something that, you know, isn't understood by a lot of people. But I think what you've done is you've really shed some light on people sitting there right now, maybe who have noticed a change where they're using numbing the TV or alcohol, or they're seeing their moods change, where maybe it's that sort of awareness. If someone in your family or maybe how to deal with kids who are, you know, maybe struggling with isolation and pulling themselves away, you know, stepping back into their world and making sure they know that you love them and that you'll make time for them. And and not pushing everything away, because I mean, it is a massive problem. But Craig, I really appreciate the work you do. I appreciate the fact that you've really, you know, uncovered so many ways that people can start to take responsibility for and really start to make choices in their life to help themselves step into, even if it's like you said. Well, I really love this way you said that, was that it just gave you enough in the beginning to find that energy, to find that hope to continue on to really, really create a happy life. So thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, David. And you know, you have a great program, and it's been a thrill to be invited to be on it. So there's a great conversation, and I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Well, I'll see you on the other side, my friend.
Bye.
You know, that's what I love about this conversation is it's tough. I mean, people who are in a place of, you know, happiness and maybe when even the word depression is brought up, it's so easy for us to discount and push aside and to look at it without any empathy at all. But when we think that, you know, in the younger age groups, in that teenage years where people are very often taking their own lives as an answer to, you know, this idea that the world would be better without them. I think it's a very, 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 very important discussion. And I also feel that the some of Craig's ideas that, you know, this is something that can be overcome with some natural strategies is awesome. But I also like the idea of his, you know, when you talk about, you know, as a parent, what do you do when you think maybe your child is struggling in this area? You know, allowing them to know they're loved as they are. And I know I challenge myself with my eldest son. You know, my youngest son and I are extremely close, and have a really very healthy and open, caring and loving relationship that's both wise in some ways and childish and open and bountiful in others. And sometimes with Cal at this age, you know, and I know that maybe not today, but maybe one day he'll listen to these words, is how much I'm in love with him, but how often I can struggle with not him, but the behavior that's exuded in this moment. And I think as parents, it's so easy to rise up to the behavior as opposed to the kid, you know, the child himself, what he's going through, the challenges, you know. And for me, it's always about, you know, with Cal, it's always about being kind, just learning how to be kind, considerate, putting other people first, and just, you know, how much that adds value to every existence, but especially to his. And so if I say 1,000 times, or I've probably said 10,000 times, you know, reminding Cal to just be kind. And so we often can bash heads, and we can struggle. We can, you know, it can feel sometimes like I'm riding his, you know, riding his butt and being harsh in some ways. And I understand the journey, and you know, I don't consider myself to be a ideal parent, but I do believe I'm a loving parent, and I do believe that sometimes, you know, when we love someone so much that the course correction and that bashing of heads that can occur between a parent and a son, I really feel that we're on the verge of this transition from parent to friend. And I realize it can't come too early, but I also realize that, you know, this conversation about depression or unhappiness is so easy to understand when you're a kid, you know, going through specific things, or maybe you're challenged with, you know, not fitting in with a group or a clique, or maybe you've been that person. I know I was as a kid, right? I never fit in. I was beaten up because I was a poor kid, a slum kid, Imagine being beaten up because you're a slum kid. You live in a slum, and the reason why the kids beat you up at school is because you know you're poor, and you're so poor you live in a condemned building. But I try and remember that, and I realize that as parents we so. I know myself, I can't tell you what you do, but I know sometimes I want my son to look and sound a certain way because it's what I think is appropriate. But I realize that, you know, Khalil Gibran in his poem about children in The Prophet, you know, he says that your sons and daughters are life's longing for itself. They come through you but not from you. And I do believe that. I do believe that we have to surrender space for our children to expand into, and how easy as parents that we don't do it. You know, we feel that we have the answer, but truly our children are the next generation. And I look back at my parents, they didn't understand me one tiny bit. And what I was going through with music and girls and life, you know, my parents, their generation was a completely different animal, different beast. And so I thought my parents came from the moon, and you know, I struggled with them. And, you know, I feel that, you know, as parents, this conversation again, how many kids feel isolated because our parents look at us and maybe they don't see what they want. So we feel, I mean, the wound of the father, the wound of the mother. And I think it's a great way to think about it. It's so easy to wound our children. And to sort of make them feel that they are not important because they are independent, they have their own world, their own mind. And some days, you know, they are feeling crappy. And so, you know, because we're out with our friends, we want them to show up in a different face, a different mask. So they learn the process of hiding themselves. So it's a really interesting scenario because I spend so much time working with adults who are, you know, feel they're really messed up inside. And they're not messed up, but they feel that way. They feel that they're hiding. And yet when I look at my own parenting skills sometimes and I realize how unenlightened I can be, I realize what a challenge it is. So this program, I'd like to dedicate to every parent, and the ups and downs, the rises and falls, the hardships, and the joys, the absolute joys of being a parent. But there are moments where we just want to, oh my God, where's the duct tape? With that being said, I have yakked far too long. You can probably tell I had a gin and tonic with my dinner. And it's a little bit in this moment of this full moon, the gorgeous British Columbian countryside, the outline of these beautiful dark mountains, the lapping of the waves, the moonlight across the water, the sparkling lights of the city of Vernon that I can see way off in the distance, and the complete serenity of no people, no noise, no neighbors. It's just spectacular. And I just realized that I'm not sure of the answer of why we're here, but I do love the idea that there's there'll be a moment when we discover a reason that's bigger, something that's so important that makes living or sort of the awakening of living. And my friend Les Brown says that. He says, you know, Dave, that the two most important days of your life are the day you're born and the day you discover why. And so with that sense, I thank you all again for being here around the world. And I look forward to meeting you personally. I know this last trip to Belize was amazing to meet some of these wonderful listeners that somehow find this, whatever it is that we do on this show, they find it important. And I'm glad you do. And I'm looking forward to this continued conversation. And I look forward to each of us stepping into a place where we can be really amazing parents, amazing friends, have amazing relationships, lead great lives, break some frickin' rules, which I love to do. And truly feel that deep sense of happiness. So with that being said, I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.